Hello, my name is Nate Sanchez, and I'm the producer and host of Supplying Success, a podcast that spotlights the state of supplier diversity in today's business world. In this series, you will hear from guests that are recognized experts in supplier diversity, and I want to remind everyone, the diverse supplier marketplace consists of certified minority-owned businesses known as MBEs, the Minority Supplier Development Councils in their respective cities that certify MBE companies, and notably the major corporations that contract with these MBEs to purchase goods and services. For this special episode, I want to introduce a very special guest, Cliff Miller, who has done a lot of great stuff. He's worked in supplier diversity in the corporate world. He's the managing principal at, I believe it's pronounced Symmetrix, for over 21 years. He's worked with the DFW MSDC, and he's, if you have any questions about supplier diversity, he's the guy to talk to. So thank you for doing this, Mr. Miller, and you know, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm very good, but I'm so thankful to be able to participate in this program because it is critically important that we communicate. Not everyone is at the same level of understanding about supply chain inclusion, you know, which is what it's kind of more from supplier diversity to supply chain inclusion. And things have changed, but outcomes really haven't changed significantly enough. So as a former corporate practitioner, I have an understanding of what happens on the buying entity side, and then as a and then as a MBE for 21 years, I have the lived experience of trying to penetrate that supply chain with that buying entity.
So, you know, let's start a little bit with your background. Based on what I was able to garner from your resume and stuff you've done in the past. So you obviously you served on the DFW MSDC board for a while. You were the VP of the Board of Directors for the Dallas Concilio of Hispanic Service Organizations. And not only were you an MBE, but you've also worked in corporate America for over 20 years with Verizon, working in supplier diversity relations, strategic alliances. So I guess talk about your background and how, you know, you've got a pretty big wealth of experiences on both sides, you know, from not just MBEs, but you've also done a lot of stuff for corporations.
Yeah. So I did 29 years in corporate America. My last five, I developed and implemented GTE's supplier diversity initiative across five business units. And I was blessed to have very senior management level support. But GTE did it as a business decision. This was before it became Verizon. GTE did it as a business decision because their core markets were California, Florida, and Texas. The populations that were growing in California, Florida, and Texas were populations of color. The elected officials, and what really was a big trigger for most corporate entities was that the elected officials, you were starting to see more and more elected officials of color in office, and they were asking questions that their non-minority counterparts didn't. So when they started asking questions, what are you doing in terms, back to DEI, one of the first questions, what are you doing in terms of hiring, staffing, and promotion? What are you doing in the area of philanthropic giving? And then kind of what are you doing in the area of contracting? So that kind of brought a focus on, and GTE recognized they needed a uniform, not just in California, Florida, and Texas, which were the business drivers for looking at a formal supplier diversity initiative at headquarters level. There were some real practical business reasons to do it at a corporate level. And that's the job I had was a job that was created to do that. And I didn't come from a procurement background, contract management background, any of that. I came from a business development background where I'd done three small startup businesses inside of a Fortune 50 company. So I didn't come in, I came in understanding what it took to hustle, not necessarily understanding the supply chain, but I had to learn that too. But we'll move on from that. But so that kind of gave me a different perception from my peers, and I had to work with contract management, and I went to contract management. I didn't have that background. I had to work with procurement. I didn't have a procurement background. I had to work with logistics. I didn't have a logistics background. But it forced me to understand the process. And that's then that's how you figure out how you implement change. Because if you got it, it made me understand the process. And that helped a lot. And we were pretty successful.
So, now you're, like you said, you're you work for an MBE, or I guess you have this, and you're the managing principal for Symmetrics. So talk about, you know, what Symmetrics does and, you know, some of the challenges you face as a minority business entrepreneur.
Okay, so I made a decision with my I actually exited GTE with the merger and with Bell Atlantic, we became Verizon. But I stayed on through there. I was asked to stay on through the end of the year, and it was a pretty good deal for me. But I launched Symmetrics is 21 years old, and I do want to say to any MBEs out there that are listening to this, you got to pay attention. And I'm not suggesting you don't, but I had to re-engineer Symmetrics 4 times. In 21 years, because the market changed, because regulations changed, because buying entity priorities changed. And so we formed Symmetrics with 4 areas. Symmetrics is a management consulting firm. One of the things I consciously did not want to do was be into a Me Too business. And by Me Too business, that's a business where you have a lot of suppliers already doing that. There's projects out there, and I don't mean any disrespect, but take printing. Printing is a Me Too business, but corporations and buying entities, public sector and private sector, had designated that as a place for spend, because it really gets back to understand spend, okay? Mm-hmm. So that was a spend area. Promotional items, good, and you can make a good living there. That was a spend. You look at different spends, and associated with that spend stream, though, are capital and you know, there are financial requirements. So if you're in printing, you got to have the equipment, right? Mm-hmm. If you're in certain other things, you have to have the infrastructure to do that. So I play on the intellectual capital side, but that's a tough business, mm-hmm. because that's not something that buying entities are readily handing out to small firms of color. You know, so I had to then be agile and figure out where the spend was going to be for management consulting services. And see then about shifting my deliverables, my services offerings to match up with that.
So, you know, you're talking about, you know, watching, you know, trying to evolve, especially, you know, like especially as a, you know, an MBE, you really have to make sure that you evolve. You know, when you evolve, you know, you provide benefits to these companies that you have contracts with. What are the biggest benefits the MBEs can provide to the economy and to the buying entity, you know, as they evolve, as they grow, you know, when an MBE evolves, it becomes a better version of itself. So what do the best versions of MBEs do for both the economy and the buying entity that they work with?
Well, and again, it depends on what verticals you're serving. So I'm going to give a kind of a global response. First of all, if you back up and if you do the statistics, small businesses are the job creators in this economy. When GTE and Bell Atlantic merged, they didn't create any new jobs. They eliminated jobs. When all the bank when M&As were going on, and you I don't want to comment on your age, but the M&A mania, big companies don't create new jobs. They eliminate jobs. So the small business community, the stats are there. They are the job creators. Number two, the U.S. economy is 70% driven by consumer spending. Well, job creators, so when you ask, what are they doing for the economy? Small businesses are creating the jobs that fuel the consumer spending because big companies are eliminating jobs. So if you ratchet it down or you take it down one more level to MBEs, MBEs tend to impact the socioeconomic progress of a community of a set of minorities, mm-hmm. because they tend to hire each other. I mean, a good example. And, well, so let me stay on point with the question. So, question becomes, or the answer is, when you net it out, MBEs push up the economy from the bottom by hiring other MBEs who then create jobs and then create consumer spending, which grows the economy, while larger firms are cutting jobs. Just look at, there's going to be another round of layoffs right now. Mm-hmm. That impacts the economy. That impacts consumer spending.
So you're talking about MBEs, you know, hire, like contracting other MBEs.
Absolutely.
And I think that's, you know, a really key point to the conversation. And, you know, when you talk about, I don't know if plight is the right word, but, you know, I guess the plight of MBEs and how they are trying to grow in this environment. I think, and, you know, when I've talked to other people on this podcast, like the importance of MBE to MBE spend and, you know, what that does for both MBEs. So, you know, what's the biggest benefit for MBE to MBE spend? And, you know, what does it mean to see MBEs utilizing and supporting other MBEs? And, you know, what kind of message does that send to the broader business community?
Well, unfortunately, that message is not that well known. The reality of that is because it's not visible, because people aren't looking there. So to the broader, from an awareness standpoint, it's not there. The reality, though, and I have the lived experience of this, Nate, so let me just share this with you. And the Dallas-Fort Worth Minority Supplier Development Council, Margo Posey, our president, has stated numerous times publicly that the council knew the recession was coming before it was announced. She knew the recession was coming because we could look at the activity of the minority businesses that were certified by the council. So there were early warnings that this was going to be tough. Now, during that period, and again, Symmetrics has a lived experience, minority businesses were what kept my company alive. I had small contracts. I had billable contracts, but I'm a management consultant, which is a discretionary spend. Mm-hmm. So a lot of MBEs are in discretionary spend. So when budgets come and the budgets get cut, you know, training, management consulting, there are discretionary expenses which are the first to go. So suppliers in that suffer, right? You're just, unless you're one of their surviving. Well, and that hit MBEs across the board. So in my case, what I did is I was able to get several small contracts with MBEs, Logisticor being one, that basically provided the cash flow for me to stay in business. Wasn't big contracts, but in my fixed cost posture wasn't that big. Mm-hmm. So MBE to MBE spend is very, very important from a practical standpoint. But also, take that practical coin and turn it over. Why should a major buying entity do business with me when an MBE won't? Or I won't do business with an MBE. So the real message there is that we need to develop our own ecosystem, mm-hmm. and we can do that. And that's happening. It's happening organically, mm-hmm. and sometimes organic growth is slow. You know, we need, I think, a greater emphasis on MBE to MBE spend in a practical way that will. But MBEs have to engage. We have to decide it's important. That's not something for buying entities to do. The way that will become important, particularly in DEI, is if they start looking down at what is the supply chain. What does your supply chain look like? Mm-hmm. How many MBEs are you doing business with? You know, what's your MBE to MBE spend? What's your, and the other elements of DEI, what's your hiring, staffing, mm-hmm. how are you promoting? So that is that attention, and I hope that attention comes to light on MBEs. There are large MBEs out there now. Mm-hmm. There are large MBEs, but if you go look at their supply chains aren't that inclusive. So the real question is, what kind of message does that send to a larger buying entity? I won't call any names here, but there are large MBEs that could hire MBEs. Some do, some don't. But it's not a business priority for them to do that. And I don't mean that in a critical sense, because they have risk management decisions to make too. But why should we expect a large buying entity to do business with us with MBEs if we don't do business with each other at whatever tier we are?
Yeah, I think it definitely requires like a conscious effort. You know, from like you can't just sit there and be like, oh, we're gonna have these practices going on, and you know, we're gonna do all this good work. But it also requires a conscious effort. And so part of that effort is the DFW MSDC. You've done a lot of great work with them. Talk about your experience with the DFW MSDC, and I guess, yeah, let's just start there. Okay. Talk about your experience with the council, and again, you know, just for clarification's sake, DFW-MSDC is the Dallas-Fort Worth Minority Supplier Development Council. Mr. Miller served on the. You're still on the board, yes?
I was term limited after 18 years.
Okay, so 18 years on the board. Yeah. That's a long time.
All right, but back up a little bit. In my corporate days, I did two terms on the national MSDC board.
Oh wow!
Okay,
awesome.
As a buying entity representative, and they had industry groups, so I got a chance to see it from that perspective. But quite frankly, the bridge gets sliced in the local or what's called the regional affiliates. So the NMSDC is the national organization. It has affiliate organizations. There are three in Texas: the Houston Minority Supplier Development Council, the Southwest Minority the Supplier Development Council, headquartered out of Austin, and the DFW-MSDC. In the DFW-MSDC, the board, what I have seen in my 18 years, I watched an interesting change in the composition of buying entity members. And that was driven, I think, by a couple of things, because supplier diversity, or now supply chain inclusion, has a growth curve like other things do, right? It has a maturation curve or an evolution curve or line, yep. Whatever. It changes. So the people that were on the board when I first joined were primarily Anglo males and females in corporate positions and in the supply chain. They were dedicated but the supply chain environment they were working in the early to mid 80s was one. Things started, the M&A drove a lot of changes, right?
Mm-hmm.
The merger and acquisition trend. So you start seeing the buying entities, which are public and private sector. When we use the term buying entities, because we don't want to just say corporations, because public sector spends a lot of money and it's taxpayer dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So we use the term buying entities to reflect both. Changes started happening in those. So first you saw process changes. And we paid a lot of attention to that at both the MBEs and the mm-hmm. and the buying entities at the board. And then subsequently, today, there are changes in the type of supply chain professional and the supply chain environment they're operating in. So the council plays a very important role in to some degree mitigating those changes, but in other words, kind of rationalizing those changes and sharing that both across the supply chain professionals, the supplier diversity professionals, and the minority business enterprise input committee, of which all MBEs are part. So those are three different stakeholder groups inside of the Dallas-Fort Worth Minority Supplier Development Council. And we try to cross fertilize.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I think one of the strengths of the council. The board is a strength, but there have been changes now in terms of the type of supply chain professional sitting on there, because as we were talking, we have a younger generation now of supply chain professionals on the board for whom inclusion seems to be a norm.
Mm-hmm.
Socially, you know, when I came on board in the early, mid 80s, we hadn't progressed to where we were now socially, so the board members from buying entities were more conscious of the disparities, you know, socioeconomic disparities. Now we have folk on who don't have that lived experience. So it's very important that we continue to collaborate
mm-hmm.
on the fact that this is, all things still aren't equal.
Yeah,
although
they
may appear to be when you go have dinner and hang out with your friends, there might be a lot of equity in that group. When it comes down to spend, go look at the spend. The real deal mm-hmm. is, what are you spending?
Mm-hmm.
What are your spend rates with people of color, with people of different lifestyles, and what are you doing, you know, and different genders?
So. Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned that kind of the social change and the social progress we've seen in your time, and again, you have, you know, 40 plus years. I mean, how many years have you been in the business?
50.
Okay.
29 years in corporate America, 21 in my own.
Okay, so we're right at 50 years. That's a long time. You've had a lot of experiences. What's the biggest type of growth you've seen, both locally and, you know, just generally, you know, in the environment for MBEs? Like what's the biggest progress you've seen that allows MBEs to succeed more than they have in the past? And then what changes do you think still need to come as we, you know, continue to evolve socially to where, you know, it's normalized to spend with MBEs?
So
it's kind of a broad question, I know.
Yeah,
but.
And some of the things that benefit MBEs. MBEs are, that's a big class.
Yeah.
You know, with different players doing different things, facing different challenges that are impacted by different happenings. So let me try to answer this with this perspective. To talk about big changes for good, there are, you kind of have to understand the environment too that's changed because it's created mm-hmm. some struggles. So the shrinking supply chain shrunk a lot of folk, MBEs included. Mm-hmm. But I think for MBEs that will take advantage of the technology, for MBEs that will take advantage of the access to information to help plan better, to help understand. I mean, you can now go research. You can pick out your target prospects. You don't have, I mean, we've already talked about how long I've been around. I remember when mm-hmm. you had to go to the library and get microfiche out.
Yeah.
I know, I'm serious. Or to get an annual report. You had to write the SEC to get a 10-K and all of that. Today, you can sit right where you are. And I say that, we had to target better. So one of the things for MBEs that are willing to invest in time and effort, that are willing to focus, mm-hmm. to understand what's changing in their client set, what's their prospect, who their clients are, what's happening. And I said, you can go detect the information that's available for you to do planning and analysis to drive your business development efforts is a significant change. Does that automatically equate to sales? No, but it can help you survive mm-hmm. and on your growth pattern. So that, I think, access to information, because it also can improve efficiencies and let you do more with less, particularly headcount, and scale your business. But fundamentally, there's a need to understand that. I think another advantage or change or benefit what's happened is there is an awareness of not just it's the right thing to do, that unless the whole body sells, many, you know, there's this now, started really in corporate America. Well, I saw it happen in corporate America when you start looking at shareholder reports and what's going on in the economy. You know, an old saying, Dallas Together Forum did this in the 80s, and they said, unless the whole body's healthy, the body's not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a recognition now that you do need employment, and if you're not creating jobs, on the buying entity side, you know, what are you doing to do that, to create jobs? So I guess I'm saying a heightened sensitivity to the importance economically to having a productive workforce with jobs who can go buy your stuff
mm-hmm.
or invest in your stuff. So that, there's a consciousness there, but if you want to just talk about some magic, there's obviously no magic wand. If you want to just, from my perspective, it's kind of more, it's opaque, but it's more thought processes on the buying entity side of recognition that we do need to be inclusive. We do need to grow the tax base.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you start looking at who's paying the taxes for the public services and all of that. And I go back, the U.S. economy is consumer driven. So there's this recognition that it's good business to grow the minority supplier base because they're the job creators along with other small businesses. And on the MBE side, the availability of information to let them be a little more strategic in their planning. And it's hard to be strategic when you're bailing, but that's life.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, all this talk about, you know, increased spend and worrying about spend and, you know, hey, what's your, all this stuff is great, you know, donations, all the stuff corporations do is great, but what's your spend? And it made me think of, and I've mentioned it on prior shows of this podcast, is the, that they talked about a bunch at the recent DFW MSDC quarterly luncheon that I believe I met you at, where they talked about the 1% plus plan. So I guess, Talk about explain the 1% plus plan, because it's, again, it's been mentioned on prior episodes, but if you haven't heard it, or just give an explanation on what the 1% plus plan is, how it's being implemented, both is it locally, nationally, and just, what that means for MBEs.
Okay. So I don't know how much time we have left. I'll try to be brief. But the first answer that I can give you is that the 1% plus, as we have developed it at DFW, that's a local initiative. There are 23 other regional councils that may have similar initiatives. National, I'm not aware of a formal initiative at the national level, and I'm not quite sure what the other regional councils are doing. But it really gets back to looking at, and there's a significant body of work that was done on economies, size of economies at the national level, GDP internationally, and when you look at the minority business population, when you look at the demographics, if you want to talk about, it really gets back down to household income, and that's why. And you know what, Nate, we probably don't have time to talk about redlining, because that is a serious, serious issue, particularly when you talk about the 1%, because it talks about the economies of minority households in comparison to Anglo households. Household incomes, which are driven by jobs or business. And the gap between minority household incomes and Anglo household incomes is huge. And at the same rate it will take, I may be misquoting, but 300, I'll just say 300 plus years.
I want to say it was, I remember that was about,
I think it might be
years.
365 years to gain parity at the growth rate.
We don't have time for that.
Well, now, when you then understand the tax base, when you then understand, the lack of increase in consumer spending on that side. So the real deal is the 1% plus is intended to accelerate the family wealth gap by increased spend with minority businesses, who in turn create jobs that employ people, who then create consumers that can buy.
Yeah, absolutely. You couldn't put it better. And I thought it was a really interesting presentation they did at that luncheon, where I definitely learned a lot about it, and I thought it was a good plan, and they seem to be very, very serious about it. So I'm excited to see how that develops over the coming years. I guess the last question before we get out of here, because I do want to, I did want to get a little bit more of your background, like a little bit more of your perspective on working in corporate America. And, you have both perspectives. Again, you have the perspective as a corporate buyer and as an MBE. So, obviously, obviously, these contracts help diverse suppliers and MBEs. Like that's obvious. They're getting contracts. But what is in it for corporations? How does working with diverse suppliers help corporate buyers? And what's the biggest benefit that they're getting out of having a diverse supplier base?
So there, and again, very little of this is altruistic, okay? And so there are different buckets. One of the reasons, in many cases, that drove programs, as I mentioned, with GTE, but it exists in other areas, is that regulators started asking, elected officials started asking, what are you doing for my constituents? As more and more minorities entered into public office, they became concerned about what was happening in their neighborhood, just like they were with housing, just like they were with education. Mm-hmm. So, just like they were with jobs. So part of it is to support the public policy agenda. All corporations have whole departments around legislative affairs or regulatory affairs, depending on their industry. So part of that benefit is that you're meeting, just like you are with health and safety, just like you are with other things. So there's a requirement in that space. Part of it is that MBEs but I'm being practical. I'm just telling you, people didn't take a nice pill, go to bed one night, wake up the next morning, kind of gently and noble. Yeah. That did not happen. There were pressures that came to say, if you want my vote on this deal, show me what you're doing for my people. There were external influences too that organizations started doing report cards. But moving on from that, and what the and I'll I'll collapse this spring forward to the pandemic. What a lot of big companies found is we always talk about MBEs and smaller businesses being nimble. They found in the pandemic, there are major entities that will tell you the MBEs were able to navigate the supply chain disruptions more quickly, more efficiently, more reliably, and provide solutions than larger suppliers with the big contracts who had a lot of internal issues to work through. So that has always been a benefit, the nimbleness, the responsiveness. Generally speaking, MBEs are hungry, and we don't take business for granted. So we want to please, and we want to keep that contract. Sometimes larger suppliers have a lot more to deal with, and they've got corporate pressures, and they got this. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, MBEs are more nimble. That's a real asset, and it became validated to a significant degree during the pandemic. I think the other thing is that people realize there's a social cost. And tax, I mean, you know, when you look at healthcare costs, particularly for the uninsured, when you look at, there's some granular examples I can use, but when you look at overall healthcare costs, what's the cost of uneducated, of an uneducated population, of an uninsured population, when you look at public safety costs, the value in job creation and economic growth is you're also addressing the social side of budgets, which impact the tax costs that as individuals you face. Now, that might seem like a stretch, but that's what I believe.
Awesome. Well, you know what, Mr. Miller, thank you for doing this. This is awesome. I think we learned a lot. I think the listeners will learn a lot from this. You have, a tremendously unique perspective as, you know, you've been in the business world for, like you said, 50 years. You've seen both perspectives as an MBE, as a corporate buyer. So I was really excited to get to hear your perspective on this stuff. And before we wrap this up, I have to send out some thanks again, as I have on each episode, to the Logisticorp Group for sponsoring this podcast. This podcast was made possible with the Logisticorp Group's support, as well as ISP Creative, just a fantastic studio out here in Irving, Texas. Me and Mr. Miller are here in just a perfect studio to have a great conversation. And so, again, thank you to the Logisticorp Group and to ISP Creative.
I'm sorry, but ISP Creative is an MBE, right?
Yeah.
You're man.
There you go. Just, okay? Just like we were talking about. That's little MBE, MBE spin.
The other thing I do want to say, though, is that when Gary Castro with Logisticorp and I served on the board together, Gary actually, I can't remember the year, but Gary led an effort to drive. He chaired an initiative to increase MBE to MBE spend, and we were able to do that. And we just kind of lost focus on that, you know. But internally, Gary was actually chaired that initiative and hosted events where we really focused on MBE to MBE spend. I just want to give Gary his props.
Yeah, absolutely. He's done a lot of great work, and that's very warranted. So, again, thank you so much for doing this, Mr. Miller. This was awesome, and be sure to tune in, and if you haven't, listen to all the other parts of the Supplying Success podcast. We'll talk to you guys next time.
My pleasure to be here.